Hello everyone, what is the crack? It's October 1st, and as we enter the last quarter of the year, I was reflecting on what an incredibly busy year we've had so far. I'm not sure it's because of the slowdown, or well, how slow 2020 was, but I'm predicting 2022 will be much of the same within pre-construction, so a lot to look forward to. Anyway, let me put away my crystal ball and tell you about our guest today. His name is Andrew Halfin, and he is the pre-construction manager for Manhattan Construction down in Houston, Texas. Now, Andrew is an avid listener of the podcast and is so passionate about pre-construction, he recorded this episode from his balcony, from the balcony on his condo in Florida. Now, that is real commitment to the pre-construction cause. There's no doubt about it when you listen to this episode. Andrew is a super smart guy, and he was part of the team at Skanska under former guest Will Senner. On this podcast, we discussed quite a lot. A couple of the points that we discussed is he did a trip with Skanska to Northern Europe to discuss pre-construction technology, and he goes into detail on what he learned on that trip. He also discusses why using a computer to count the stupid things makes so much sense when it comes to estimating a pre-construction. That led us then into pre-construction data. He has completed a huge amount of highly complex project during his career. One in particular was the Ranger Stadium in Virginia. And then we finished off with some tongue-in-cheek Texas banter. He discussed why Houston is so much better than Austin and Dallas. But as always, before we speak with Andrew, let's speak with our main sponsor, which is Stuart Carroll. He is the president of Beck Technology.
Hey everyone, I'm Stuart Carroll. I'm the president at Beck Technology. We are based in Dallas, Texas, and we are a pre-construction software company. We were founded in 1996, and we've really been focused on the world of pre-construction. We believe that pre-construction is where the biggest decisions that impact the outcome of a project occur, and we believe that through the use of technology, we can enable our users to make better, more informed pre-construction decisions, the net result of which is to make the world a better place. We're excited to announce our partnership with Niche. And one of the things that really excites me is bringing pre-construction professionals the opportunity to get certified in our latest product, Destiny Estimator. It's our belief that if we can help you understand how integrated pre-construction and pre-construction data lifecycle can benefit your business, it will ultimately improve the pre-construction services that you bring to your customers. And we'd like to announce that we're going to be releasing this at the end of Q1, and it's available to anybody that's a friend of Niche.
Andrew Halfin, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Now, tell everybody where you're at right now, Andrew, because I am deeply disappointed.
I'm currently out on the beach in Destin, Florida. So currently in the condo, but on vacation here, but no complaints on my side.
Good man. Now there's dedication, folks. Dedication to the pre-construction cause. Andrew Halfin is on holidays doing the pre-construction podcast. I love it.
It's good to be here.
Good man. How's the holidays going? Are you enjoying yourself? I hope you're relaxing properly.
Yeah, it's always great to get away. I think in this business, you know, it's a very, you know, it can be a 24/7 game. So it's always good to get away, unplug, you know, turn off the email and just, you know, sneak away for a couple of days or a week. I think it's really important.
Absolutely, 100%. To talk a lot about burnout right now, the amount of bids that are coming through people's desks, it's unheard of. Definitely in the last 10 years, the amount of bids that people and estimators and pre-con teams are expected to bang out, it's you definitely need your break. And I can't think of a better place than Florida.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Good man. Okay, well, let's get back into it, Andrew. Pre-construction estimating. Back when you were a young boy growing up in Houston, was it always going to be construction? You look like a fit guy. Was there any sports involved, any IT, or was it always construction?
No sports. When I was in high school, I really wanted to be an architect. I took some drafting classes in high school, and I had an uncle that worked for a pretty cool architecture firm up in Dallas. And so it was, it was kind of my dream to study architecture and become an architect. I spent a spring break working for my uncle, and I think it was my senior year in high school. And he spent a week trying to convince me that I did not want to be an architect. He's a phenomenal architect. He works with great architects. And, his whole viewpoint is if he can convince you not to do it, then you shouldn't do it. Architecture is a hard career. And it is, the pay isn't always that great. And so he really pushed me to, construction management. Honestly didn't know you could get a degree in construction. I thought in high school that if you wanted to work in construction, you started digging ditches and maybe you end up, being the boss one day. I had no idea.
That just shows you how far we have to go to convince people. I mean, I keep piping on about we should be teaching people in high school about pre-construction. Mm-hmm. It's a career. That just shows you how far we have to go to actually convince people that actually you can get a degree in construction and as a career choice.
Yeah. So he convinced me, construction, still in the industry. I thank him every time I see him. It's been a really rewarding career and I love, almost every day of it. So he convinced me to, apply for construction science at Texas A&M. And that's where I ended up, after high school.
Good man. And how was the degree? I liked it to kind of jump into the degree, the kind of the modules learned, what sort of things that they touch on, BIM, VDC, pre-construction estimating, or was it just like every other construction management degree around the US, it's 95% project management and operations and a couple of token estimating modules in there?
Yeah, I actually had, at the time, we had a estimating professor that was an actual quantity surveyor. So he was a British guy, came from that background. And, quantity surveying is very different in Europe than it is in the U.S. And so he had a bit more of an analytical approach. He really had that formed math background of, you have, set processes and procedures when you're doing quantification that I think a lot of estimating professors don't have behind them. And he had that industry experience too. It was probably the first class in college that I was good at, honestly. That freshman, sophomore year, you're taking general business, you're taking calculus and physics, and they kept beating the crap out of me. And then I ended up in this estimating class and I found out that, I was really good at it.
Right.
And so that's really what I kind of figured out, like, hey, maybe this, pre-con side of the business, would work for me. Cause, even at schools like A&M, they push hard, you're either going to be a PM or a super one day. There's not a lot of talk about pre-construction as a career path. But I really appreciate, that one professor, kind of opening that up and making me realize that, A, it was something I was probably going to be good at, and B, it was, really interesting.
Brilliant. Well, that's the closest thing, because I'm always pushing to professors. We've had professors on the podcast before. I'm always pushing that we actually should have a quantity surveying, or you can call it whatever you want, construction, pre-construction or estimating degree in the US, especially how far pre-construction and estimating has come and how important it is in the life cycle of commercial construction, especially. So that's probably as close as I've heard a good quantity surveyor from Europe coming and teaching, not how they do in Europe, but teaching how it's taught in Europe, how they do things in Europe, but then molding it into how construction happens in the US. Do you think he had a big impact on you actually deciding to go into estimating and pre-construction?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was the first class that I still remember it. It was the first time I ever, and it's probably the last time I ever got 100 on a test in college. We were sitting in this class and it was a dirt work takeoff. And it was, you know, a quantity survey on excavation and backfill. And that was the test. And I remember a lot of my fellow students, you know, I mean, it's dividing by 27, you know, you got to do spoils factors. It's not, you know, in retrospect, it's not anything rocket science, but you know, when you're, you know, dumb college kid, you know, if you don't listen to the guy, you know, you can get that math pretty wrong. And so I remember looking around after taking that test, you know, most of my fellow students got like 50s or 60s, you know, there were not a lot of great grades. And I was sitting there and like, for the first time I was the smart kid, you know, and I was like, oh, well, you know, if I can do this, maybe I can end up in this business. And I still remember going to, you know, career fairs at A&M because A&M does require a full semester internship, which is one of the best things they do as a program. And I remember going to the career fair and saying, you know, talking with Turner or, you know, Skanska or the different firms there and telling them like, hey, you know, I want to be an estimating. And most of them would just look at you like you got two heads. They're like, because the guys recruiting are always, you know, senior PEs or assistant supers, or you might have a VP there randomly, but you know, they're not the people doing recruiting at a lot of the career fairs don't know anything about estimating. But when they forwarded my resume to the estimating group, they got all excited because it's, you know, it's not often that you get someone that honestly is interested in pre-con.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's 1 or 2%. Any clients that I speak with that go to career fairs, it's 1 or 2 out of 100 that I actually asked about estimating. And literally, they don't come in and say, I want to be an estimator. They ask about it. What's this estimating pre-construction? What's this nonsense you talk about? And that's amazing. So I'm sure their eyes lit up. But I'm just thinking that I think it would, because of A&M, if you had gone to another university or did another course and that didn't touch on estimating, you probably would have been the same. You probably would have been going, oh, well, I'll do field engineering, project engineering, assistant project management. You would have gone down that line as well. It was just the professor, which I think is brilliant. I would love to know your peers in that class, how many actually went into pre-construction and estimating?
Yeah, actually, because I've stayed in touch with some of them. I think, you know, hell, there's, you know, hundreds of students every semester graduating, but there was, I mean, probably a handful. I mean, less than 10 that ended up in it. Okay. I mean, it's not a huge side of the industry anyway, but it's definitely not well fed from the market. And I know now, sitting where I am today, we're always looking for talent. We're always looking for people that want to do it. You know, the last thing we want to do is pull in someone that wants to be a project engineer and they come in and, you know, they just hate counting things and they think it's the worst thing ever. And it's really a great career, but they've never known anything about it. And so it's hard to sell someone that day one doesn't want to do what you do.
And that's my biggest gripe with the whole thing. I think there's a massive gap or the amount of people and graduates and even high school people that like construction, but they don't want to go and put their hard hat on, get the welly on, get their hands dirty and their feet dirty, but actually like numbers and like the quantifiables of black and white. So kind of like accountancy or law, the black and white of everything, but actually want to build things. They feel that there's not a space for them in construction, where in fact there is, and a big space at that, with huge potential, huge growth opportunities, and it pays really, really well.
Well, and I think one of my places to try and steal people from is that, you know, architect that has 2-3 years of experience, whether it be interiors, exteriors, or whatever their experience is. Those have been some of the best estimators to work with and hire, is those people with that architecture background. Because we spend so much time interfacing and communicating with architects, that it can be really disarming if I bring in, you know, one of their peers.
Brilliant.
So if we're having to talk, if we're having to have a hard conversation with budget, which these days we're having a lot of those, it can be a little more relaxing or a little more understandable if that architect is, you know, talking with someone on my side who, you know, has that architecture degree and that experience and knows that we're not trying to, you know, beat the hell out of their design. We're just trying to get it back in the budget. So I've really enjoyed working with, you know, some of the architects that have, you know, jumped ship and come to the fun side of the business, as I'd like to say.
I was going to say, you've taken them from the dark side. Brilliant. No, and I agree. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying architecture, you talked about architecture, that's what you want to do and you got advice from an architect. I'm not saying that it's not fun either, but as you say, it's something that it's an interesting background. So I like that. I'm going to push on that. So you're finished in university. You step into Skanska. So you've obviously picked Skanska from the careers fair. Tell me what it's like having just come out of college, going into a big firm like Skanska, knowing that you want to do estimating, going into the estimating team. What's it's like any job. It's overwhelming. It's daunting. You're going, how can I ever do this over the next? But you obviously pick it up and you quickly get up to speed. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible experience. I mean, you know, Skanska, obviously a multinational GC, but here in the U.S., I think at the time back in 2009, there were probably 250, maybe 300 pre-con folks at Skanska. And that was in a time within Skanska that they were really pushing a one Skanska model. And so we were, we were kind of the tip of that spear. So I spent a lot of time, you know, working with other offices. So yes, you'd be working on, you know, a hospital in Houston, you'd be servicing our local market, cause local has to service local. But whenever a big project would come up, so if there's a $600 million research lab in New Jersey, you know, they'd pull estimating resources from different regions. And so that was one of the really exciting things about working there was you'd get broad experience because, you know, one week you'd be working on a hospital in Nashville, the next week you'd be working on a hotel in, you know, Atlanta, and then you're working on, you know, a sustainable net zero building in Portland. And so we were able to work as a group, you know, kind of at that national level and share resources. And it was a great way to learn fast, because you're getting exposure to a lot of different people, and a lot of different project types. So that they had a really cool model of collaboration, and I think it's probably served them pretty well over the years.
Absolutely. 100%. Couldn't agree more. And part of that innovation and development and moving forward was, you heading off to Helsinki, for some innovation and an idea of BIM VDC, how they're using it there. Was that like an international meeting or meetup within Skanska, or how did that work?
Yeah, so they pulled from all over. So when I was in the BIM Competence Center over there, there was a girl studying, you know, embedded carbon, and she was from the UK. There was another guy, an architect that worked for Skanska from Poland, that was working on, you know, Revit models and assemblies and trying to, you know, look at the efficiencies of BIM and on the kind of design build side of things. And then we had the standing group of researchers that were all Helsinki based. So it was a motley crew. International folks. And it was, you know, one hell of an experience. I mean, you know, they probably to this day are, you know, 5 to 10 years ahead of the rest of us. That Northern Europe, you know, economy is so, labor is so expensive for them. That anything that they can do to push, you know, labor off site or get more efficient, you know, has huge returns. Yeah. Whereas, you know, somewhere like Houston, Texas, labor is, you know, so much cheaper. So it's hard to translate some of that, you know, uber focused, you know, pre-construction stuff that they do. But it was really exciting to learn, you know, the different technologies that were out there. In Europe, they're not beholden to, you know, the giant Autodesk overlord that we are kind of held hostage to. Yeah. So they had different tools to choose from that we don't often, you know, get to play with. But it was eye-opening, and it was a great experience to try and figure out on the technology side, you know, how to really, you know, use the computer to count the stupid things that you don't want to count. So, you know, I always go back to doors. You know, if I could not count doors again, you know, that'd be a great thing. So let the computer count the doors, you know, let the computer count the simple stuff, and you can focus on the problem children.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And what was the big takeaway from that? I mean, obviously, I'm sure there was loads of ideas flowing everywhere when you get into like a war room like that, but not only an international war room, and you sit down and you look at ideas and technologies. What was the big thing back then that you thought, you know what, that's going to be a game changer, and I can't wait till that day?
So I'll tell you, I was grinning from ear to ear the entire time I listened to your interview with Will Center. Because me and a couple of the other folks that were working in those early days, we're really looking at the idea of data. And we're trying to step outside of that initial view of these are lines on paper, you know, they're 3D objects, but really that it's data that we're all trying to work with. So one of the things we're trying to conceptualize and look at was, you know, what if one day we could have this data in a database and it could be queryable, and you could look at the metrics in the past, you know, performance of buildings and skin ratios and the different really kind of informative data points that are hard to capture manually. So when I was listening to you talk to Will and how they're pushing Power BI and their analytics thing, I would say that was one of the things that we were working on, you know, back in, you know, 2011, was the early days of trying to imagine, you know, and we said it a lot, is, you know, how do we tell stories with the data? Because there was, you know, this, when the BIM kind of thing hit our industry, it was just a tidal wave of data. And we're still trying to claw our way out of it and to amalgamate and change that data into something that's an actual competent story. So that was kind of the big research focus was how do we deal with this data, and how can we, you know, manage and get it into, you know, deliverable formats that work. I think tools like Power BI now are actually allowing it to happen more efficiently. You know, it was pretty clunky back in those early days. But it's been super exciting to see, you know, some of that early research, you know, come forward and end up being a success for guys like Will.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, with anybody that hasn't listened to the interview, Will Center it's so refreshing, and it's an eye opener to a lot of people. And he's just a smart guy, a cool, smart guy. So I'm glad you referenced, and shout out to Will if he's listening. But that's amazing. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, you mentioned Northern Europe there being so far ahead. I think there's certain firms in the US that are so far ahead of everyone else, and everyone else is just playing catch up. I think, to be honest with you, I think COVID in 2020 is a big help to those mid-sized firms, because it gave them an opportunity to breathe. They weren't as busy, so they actually got time to look into pre-construction technology and see how it could expedite and complement the already overworked pre-construction and estimating team. Cool. So give me an idea of some of your standout projects now, Andrew. Was there any that you could kind of hang your hat on and go, you know what, I really enjoyed that. That was a serious accomplishment.
Yeah. So when I was at at Skanska, worked on a lot of healthcare stuff. I was involved in a project that somehow ended up being a bar bet, from what we understand, between one of our regional managers and the client. Both that guy and the client were talking one day and said, you know, I don't think any of us have ever built a hospital in a year. And so somehow it got put on us to do it. Right. So that was actually, I followed that project from pre-construction into the field. Right. And I became a project engineer on that job. And that, you know, that's something I'll tell to anyone in estimating. You have to go out and get, you know, field experience at some point. And it's ideally suited if you can follow a job you've been, you know, servicing on pre-con out into the field. And that happened for me on that job. And so, on that project, you know, it was doing the estimating, doing the buyout, getting the contract set up, and then going out and, you know, starting on submittals and RFIs and getting going. And, it was a really cool opportunity. And you know, that project had a lot of prefabrication. We, you know, we used BIM, you know, it was a pretty, you know, complex thing. And you know, to this day, you know, I can say, you know, from scraping dirt to turning over the hospital for the client, you know, it was 365 days. And so that was a standout one for me. That was ppretty early in the career, but definitely, you know, year and a half, 2 years ago, we finished up the new Ranger Stadium. And so I moved up to Arlington at the onset of that project, and stayed, you know, on site through, you know, completion. So servicing on a job like that, there's pre-con needs up until the last day. I mean, we were writing contracts, negotiating scopes, you know, near turnover with different things. So it had a need for that pre-con service. And it was always exciting to be, you know, negotiating a contract or looking at value engineering and then, you know, putting on your hard hat and vest and walking out there and seeing, you know, one of the world's largest cranes doing, you know, a huge pick, or starting to, you know, watch the roof roll. So, you know, anytime you build a billion-dollar project, you know, that one's going to sit with you. And I think I'll look back at, you know, that Ranger Stadium for a long time to come.
Wow. Imagine. I was down at the Cowboy Stadium, and that was well over $1 billion as well. The Ranger Stadium, it's just these stadiums are just becoming more complex. What was the biggest thing from that project that you thought, you know what, that's incredible? What sort of innovative techniques did you use? What sort of methods did you use? Maybe it was the roof. Was there anything that stood out and just blew your mind?
I think, you know, it was one thing. I don't know if it was one thing in particular, but you know, the pre-construction focus, you know, shifts a little bit when you get to mega jobs. There's a lot more focus on risk. So when you're looking at a $200 million steel subcontractor, you're looking at a $100 million electrical contract. You know, you're really trying to manage the risk side of things. And often, you know, in pre-construction, we can sometimes get overly focused on dollars. And, you know, hey, this is a good deal. And it's not that we ignore our operations counterparts, but, you know, on a, you know, small, you know, office building project, the difference between an A+ electrician and a, you know, B+ electrician really isn't going to hurt the schedule. You know, it might be a little more headache. But when you're doing these super large complex projects, it's really about aligning the project with the right people. So, you know, the roofer we ended up selecting for the project, did the Cowboy Stadium with us. He'd done other large projects. And when you get on something like this, where all of your hoisting is done by helicopter, you know, you need someone that has experience in it. So it was really eye-opening for me to kind of, it's not that you're not focusing on dollars, but you're equally focusing on experience, competence, and really at the end of the day, and it's something we're known for, is the ability to open that stadium on the day we promised.
Yeah.
And we know there's going to be a million problems. There's going to be, you know, tons of delays. There's going to be something that goes wrong. But we're going to open the stadium. Yeah. So it's about getting buy-in from the trade contractors and making sure that, you know, you can deliver a contract that is, yeah, it's under the owner's budget, but at the end of the day, these people are going to be able to service us in a way that, you know, is going to be, you know, an aligned set of goals, and, you know, we're going to get the thing open.
Yeah, a proper team effort. And it's like mm-hmm. sports. I always make the analogy with sports. I mean, nobody ever won everything with a team full of Tom Brady's. You do need specialist people to make something like that as large and as a mega project as complex as that. But that's, I mean, it's some achievement, especially going through pre-con with it and then going and doing it on site as well. I'm sure it was a satisfying one. So what's the future hold? What's next on the agenda? Are you going to relocate to another stadium, or what's the plans?
Yeah, so I'm back in Houston, Texas, loving it, not really planning to move, but, you know, in this industry, you know, you gotta be willing to go where the work is. And, you know, I think, you know, COVID has shifted that a bit. I keep seeing, you know, remote work opportunities and, you know, in the office one day or in the office on bid day. And I think that's probably a pretty cool innovation. That's going to have an impact on us. Just right now I'd say I'm loving Houston, and, you know, focusing on, you know, hopefully, you know, a post-COVID economy that's a little bit less stressful than the current one.
With material prices that are exactly what they should be rather than fluctuating.
Yeah, I mean, it has been an absolute learning experience this last 18 months. I mean, you know, I got in the business in 2009, and, you know, yes, we cared every once in a while about escalation, but, you know, we would only really ever care about it if we're trying to, you know, compare an old project to a new project. It wasn't really a felt thing in the business. And, you know, right now we're seeing monthly, you know, 1 to 2 to 3% increases. And it has been, you know, they pay us to know what's going on. You know, they pay us to know how much things cost. And on a weekly basis, I'm struggling to understand fundamentally what things cost. So it has been a really, really challenging year. And we're not seeing that slow down. So it's really been, you know, I'd say this last year has been about, you know, what's possible. There's people out there that have kind of given up and they're saying, well, you're going to get what you get. But clients don't pay us for that. They pay us for solutions. So that's been honestly the exciting part of it. It's like, okay, so PVC isn't available. You know, what are we using? Or, okay, steel's not available.
Yeah, Andrew, no doubt about it. The Rangers project, I mean, huge, complex, mega project. Love your feedback on that. If we can just quickly touch on Houston, Andrew, I mean, essentially that's my day-to-day bread and butter, is relocating pre-construction and estimating talent all over the U.S. I've been to Texas, been to Dallas, haven't made it to Houston yet. It's on the list. What kind of place is it? If we've got a few jobs down there now and we're trying to get candidates to relocate to Houston, what's the attraction? What do you like about it? What would make people move there?
Yeah, I mean, I first have to take a dig at Dallas. So Houston is, of course, a way cooler town than Dallas. You know, growing up here, it's, you know, it's a huge city. You know, we're home to NASA. We're home to, you know, the Astros and a lot of cool stuff. The biggest thing with Houston is, you know, it's probably the most diverse city in the United States. And it is, you know, an incredible place to live and work. There's always incredible food, nightlife. There's always something to do. And it's, you know, it's a working town. You know, there's kind of the two ends of the spectrum, both on the oil and gas side and then the medical. So we have, you know, the Texas Medical Center that's booming right now. They're doing some very large construction projects out there, and it's, you know, the world's largest medical center already, and it's just growing. And then we obviously have the oil and gas side of the town. We've been known for a long time for the petrochemical construction side. You know, when oil's been dipping, you know, it definitely affects us. But, you know, oil, I think we're back at the $60, $70 a barrel, and that's where we like it to be, or hell, maybe even a little bit more. So we're one of the few towns that when gas prices go up, we celebrate and do cartwheels, because that means more construction for us.
Yeah, brilliant. No, I love it. And it is on the list. The pre-construction podcast was always about live recordings. And then once COVID hit, I obviously couldn't do it live. When I do, I'll get around all these cities. And it's definitely, you're definitely someone I want to speak to again, because as I said to you offline, you're really easy to listen to. You've got a methodical approach, a practical approach to pre-construction and estimating. And essentially that's probably why you're so successful. So thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you.
All the best, Andrew.
All right, thanks.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Andrew. No doubt about it, super smart guy, loads of great experience, so hope you got some takeaways from that. Stay tuned. I've got a lot of very good episodes coming up between now and the end of the year. Hopefully, we'll see a little bit of slowdown around Thanksgiving, and I'll get recording some more. Any questions about the episode, about the podcast, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. If you want to contact Andrew, he's always available on LinkedIn as well.